Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man. I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Every heart that I ever stole, I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got cold.
Hey, good evening. Good evening, everyone. This is co-producer Kenny Hodge on Blog Talk Radio. It is a Hearts to Hearts podcast special. Tonight, we're kind of breaking the mold. Most of my postal podcasts are 15 minutes, but tonight we've got a guest with us. He's a mail handler out of the Dayton, Ohio branch by the name of Brother Mark Brooks. He's going to share a story of an experience that he's just came through, and we hope that by him sharing his experience on what he went through, it's going to be some things in there that we definitely want to change. There's going to be some things in there that we might want to hold on to. But I say to you again, this is my attempt as a candidate and soon to be your next local president to show you how differently I would like to do things in Local 304. So without too much further ado, let's get right into our podcast. And the podcast tonight is called An Interview with Mark Brooks. Good evening, Mark, and how are you doing this evening?
Fine, and you?
Oh, I'm just great. I'm great. I think that I commend you on being able or being willing to share an experience, a personal experience with the members of the branch, because I think all too often things happen, whether they be good or bad, and nobody gets to fully understand or even begin to understand except the people that are directly in that branch. And I think it's time that we open up and we let everybody in 304 know the good and the bad, or excuse me, the good and the things that we need to improve. Let's throw the word bad out. So tell me something about you, Mark. How did you come to end up working in Dayton, Ohio?
Well, I'm originally from Dayton, Ohio. I'm a 32-year veteran of the Postal Service. I originally started in 1986 in Dallas at the Bulk Mail Center, and that was Local 311. I worked for them. Then I transferred to Atlanta. That was Local 310, their BMC. From Atlanta throughout my career, then I transferred up to Washington, D.C., Local 305, to the main branch on Brentwood Road. I forgot what they call that facility now, but it was named after someone had died in the anthrax era up there. And now I'm back home in Dayton, Ohio, working for 304. So I had a wide range and wide vast of union activity throughout my career.
And how many total years do you have in service?
32 plus. I started in March of 1986.
just as I introduce the audience, paint a picture of who they're going to be listening to, were you ever a steward or a branch president?
I was a steward at one particular time in Dayton, Ohio, for Local 304, and my branch president in the Dayton office was William Bip McLemore, who's currently the president of Local 304.
Oh, so you worked directly for the current local president, but he was a branch president then?
Correct.
Wow. So that means the two of you should have at least know each other and have some kind of rapport where we should know what to you should know what to expect when handling union matters. But let me ask you, I'm seeing that you've been in Atlanta, D.C., Ohio. So, I mean, you're a well-traveled mail handler. And one of the things that I really like about that is because as we as mail handlers, when we work in several facilities, it gives us a much more rounded picture of separating what's a good practice and what's a practice that we really need to improve. So I like the amount of experience that you're bringing to the Dayton office. But let's get right into the meat of the matter, for lack of a better phrase. We're going to talk with you tonight about, I'm going to set the table and then we're going to sit down and break bread. We're going to talk with Mark Brooks tonight about an allegation Dayton Post Office had against him. We're going to talk about the process of him being walked out of the building. We're going to talk about the process of him preparing for arbitration and how that went. So, again, we're just talking about processes tonight. Now, all the processes will have names attached to them, but I want you to really understand it is not the names that's important. We want to look at the process and understand, can we fix that process or can we make it better? So let's get started, Brother Mark. What were your charges that originally got this whole thing started? In fact, give us a little background on how this whole nasty situation got started.
Well, how it all came about was that I was charged with making some type of action or alleged action by another employee / employees that it was improper conduct. Now,
improper
on April
conduct.
2nd, correct. Now, that's what I was, when I was walked out this past April 2nd, I was not notified the improper conduct. I found out that about a month and a half, 2 months down the road. When I was put on the mercy placement on April 2nd, the manager on duty told me, I'm not at liberty to tell you what you're being put out for. I'm just putting you out on mercy placement. And he said that my branch president knows about it, Consuela McLemore. And he told me to contact her because he wasn't at liberty to give me any information because there was a current ongoing investigation. Meanwhile, when I was walked out, I didn't have no union representation at all. I was just told to leave the premises, hand over my ID badge and time badge. Meanwhile, it took me several days to get in touch with Consuela about the incident. Oh, go ahead.
Now, I want to interrupt you just for a second, and then I'm going to allow you to finish. I'm going to try to summarize what I think I just heard, because I want to make sure that the audience heard what I think I heard. You were walked out of the building, and no one told you why. They just came to you and took your badge, you know, said, turn over your badge and your card, and we walked you out of the building, and we don't have to tell you why. Just get out. We'll contact you later.
The plant manager told me that my branch president will explain everything to you. She knows everything, and that was Consuela McLemore, my branch president.
Okay.
Go
ahead, brother. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. It took me a couple of days to get in touch with Consuela. And when I was able to reach her by phone, she told me she didn't know anything about it. So that's where I was. I called her and my shop steward for several weeks off and on. They said management hadn't gotten back with them about nothing.
So, again, just a quick summary. You're out of work right now. We're talking about several weeks, and you still don't even know why?
Correct. Roughly almost 2 months before I found out. And how I really found out, I got wind of it because I took a second alternative to dealing with my case by filing an EEO. And I found out in the EEO process, what was I being charged? And it was improper conduct, but
I keep repeating this because I really want I really need people to understand that this is not normal for somebody to be taken out of work, not even notified by management, not even notified by your union representation, in this case, your branch president. This is not normal. Because if the post office takes you out of the building, there's got to be a reason. And if we're talking about putting you on emergency placement, ER, EP, I'm sorry, there's got to be a reason. And that reason can't be kept from you. Now, why we couldn't get to you, we as a union, and explain to you what happened, that's kind of baffling to me right now.
Also, I found out through the mail, about 2 months after being off the job, roughly a month and a half. It was like sometime in the middle of May, the last part of May, that they sent me a letter in the mail saying I was being put on emergency placement without pay for improper conduct. It didn't say in reference to what. It just said improper conduct. It didn't say that I committed some type of act that was considered improper conduct.
No, I got to ask you, so are you aware of any kind of fight that your local put up for you, the branch put up for you? Because I'm telling you, that just does not sound normal that somebody's out of work that long and the union don't know, or the union's not contacting the person to tell them what happened. I find that very odd. So you left work in April. So when you say you got that letter from management, and think about this, is that the first time since you've been walked out of that building April 2nd that you heard anything from management, that letter that you have in May?
That is correct.
Wow.
That is correct, because when I was walked out on April 2nd, management told me to contact my branch president, and she knew all about it. When I made contact with her, she said she didn't know nothing about it. I made several attempts to contact her, and then I guess it got kind of habitual. She was referring me to my shop steward, telling me I should go through my shop steward and then go through her, you know,
well,
as
again,
far as me making an inquiry. So
now, if
I'm not saying there's a breakdown in communication. There's a lack of communication.
Okay. So there's no breakdown. It just wasn't there.
It was very minimal, because I made so many inquiries. It was like, you know, I guess they felt like they was being hassled or whatever, or they didn't want to be bothered with me. You know, here comes the same question again. You know, I felt like I was put off, and really in my circumstances by being out on emergency placement, that was extreme. Somebody that be put out on emergency placement should be try to be brought back as a priority in their local.
Yes, yes. I can repeat that or resound that sentiment over and over again. And I do understand when the branch president says, run that through your stewards, but not when an employee is out of work. Out of work employees mean that's something that the branch president needs to put both hands on, because they're going to have direct contact with the local president to get that employee back to work. Let me just recognize a caller that we have. Hey, good evening, caller from Ohio. How are you doing this evening? Okay, that's fine. You can listen. If you have some comments, please feel free to share. Okay, Brother Mark, so we walked out in April. Now here it is May. Well, let me ask you a question. So from April the 2nd up until you got that letter from management, were you still getting paid every 2 weeks?
No, I was out without pay. And also, when I made initial contact with Consuela, I asked her about the situation about since the officiating person in charge said that it was an ongoing investigation. They couldn't say nothing about reason why I was out on emergency placement. I asked her how come I'm not on administrative pay. I never really got a concrete answer about that. I said it seemed like if they're doing administrative action against me and involves discipline, and I don't know what I'm being charged with or whatever. It seemed like while the investigation's going, since they conducted it, it seemed like I should have the opportunity to be out on administrative pay without pay. But I really feel as though I got some bad information from Consuela. Consuela told me that management could put me out without pay if they choose to.
Well, I mean, not for just any old reason. I mean, they have a right. They can put us out, but there's got to be a reason behind it. And again, when we start talking about EP, emergency placement, just the name of it kind of lets you know that you can't do something 2 or 3 days ago, and now I'm going to put you out on EP. EP is designed that we are in the thick of the moment right now, and I have to separate you from this situation. It's not we have an argument on Monday night, and then Friday the supervisor comes to his mind and says, hey, I'm going to put you out of emergency placement for what happened Monday. That's not the design of emergency placement. Emergency, key word. But nonetheless, so we walk out. You get walked out on the 2nd of April. You get notified by management. And just one other thing. When management puts you out of the building on emergency placement, the rest of that day is supposed to be administrative leave. And then they're supposed to follow up with a letter immediately to let you know that you're coming off of, you know, your emergency placement is going to be effective XYZ date. So until they notify you of such, it is my understanding that you're still in the paid status. So why they didn't pay you from April to May at that time, don't really understand that. So we got and again, just so we can repeat this to the audience, what was your actual charge again?
Improper conduct. And what made it so bad, I got like over 400 hours of annual, a year's worth, 2,000 and some plus hours of sick leave that I did not even give the opportunity to use.
And again, what was the improper conduct? After you finally found out, what was the improper conduct that was so bad that you had to be out of work for 6 months?
Well, now I have to go back before April to tell you about that. In June, I found out that there were allegations made against me by current employees back in March.
Okay.
And I was wondering why they didn't take action in March instead of waiting to April and saying they conduct an interview. Also, this incident that happened, it was an incident that happened in March that involved another employee that's tying me in with her situation. What had happened back, and I'm going to go back further to give you a little case history. Back in October of 2017, me and another employee got threatened that if our names come across his desk in a meeting, grant you, in a meeting with Consuela, the branch president present, saying that he will try to get us fired and we'll have to fight to get our job back if our name come across his desk again. And what that meeting came about was that he basically charged me and another employee of filing a false incident report. What had happened, another employee had an incident with another employee and it caused injury and she reported it. Okay. I was near that incident when it took place. But coincidentally, the other employee had an incident with me a week later from this prior incident. So I filed the incident report. Okay, when I filed the incident report, they said I was filing a false charge because there was one person there that was a witness, and they were a friend of the person who caused the alleged act. Now, going back to this other incident that happened with this other employee, she filed her claim and stuff, and they was thinking that we are tag teaming, jumping up on this one person. And now, granted, in this meeting, when we had this meeting, he told us that, like I said, if our names come across his desk again, he was going to fire both of us. Now, this meeting that took place, we weren't allowed to say anything. So I felt like my constitutional right of freedom of speech was violated. Also, I didn't have due process, and I'm looking at my branch president sitting there taking this stuff from this manager in this meeting, a one-way communication. He said flat out, he's going to do all the talking, and that's it. And that's what took place. And that's what I really think all this action came up about, because this other person had an incident with the same person that she had one with in October. So her name came up in March. And I'm thinking that this guy is standing by his word, or he done sent word to other managers, hey, put them both out. Now, to me, that's like he filing a frivolous charge against somebody for filing an incident report. And granted, this action that took place in March, I didn't even have anything to do with it. But I got put out with this other individual. I actually got put out. From April to October, I've been out.
And again, you've been out all this time for an improper conduct charge. And correct me if I'm wrong. What was the improper conduct? Could you tell us again?
Well, it was some allegations that some employees made against me. Now, Consuela said there were 15 different individuals made statements against me. And I've asked Consuela several times who said what and what was said. She never showed me no statements at all. During the grievance process, I asked to get, you know, anything that's in my case file pertaining to this issue. She gave me bits and pieces of it. But some of the allegations was like, I was supposed to had said, I hope this individual die. I hope she strokes out. You know, I didn't know this individual at the time had no heart issue, but they was trying to make that like a threatening statement. They also said at one time that I would do anything to get this individual removed off her job. You know, so they were saying that I was going to harass her. They were saying also this was harassing, that I was talking about this individual, about she's lazy, she don't do nothing. Those are the only three statements I keep hearing over and over continuously when I ask about what are the other allegations and stuff. I'm not even for sure if it's actually 15 statements. I've never seen them.
So you got all this info, and this is, and again, I keep recapping because, again, this sounds so peculiar to me that I want to make sure that everybody's following. So you're out of work for about 6 months on improper conduct that you've never actually seen any proof or any evidence against you. All you know is your branch president said she had it, or she said there's 15 letters against you. So there's 15 people who wrote statements. But let me tell you something, and I don't have any problem saying this for all to hear. If one of the worst improper conduct allegations were, even again, and I'm not saying that you said it, I'm just saying if one of them was, if you said to somebody else, I hope she strokes out and dies. Now, let me tell you, that's some piss poor things to say about anybody, but that's not a threat. So we're out of work all this time, and if those things were supposedly said in March, well, in April when they walk you out of the building, that no longer meets the guidelines for emergency placement. Now, if they would have walked you out that night that they said that, still, I think, way overboard. But if it was allegedly said in March, and now in April they want to put emergency placement on you, that's not correct. And for your manager to meet with you and say this is a one-way meeting, with your branch president in there, and they had no voice. I don't know. I don't know if they were intimidated by management or what that situation was, but I don't have one-way meetings because my contract tells me when I am in union capacity, management and I are on the same level. So that whole we're going to have a conversation where I just talk, you can miss me with all that because that's not going to happen. So,
Ken, let me just give you a fact and the audience a fact too. These statements that or allegations that were supposed to be had against me, as I speak now, I do not know specific dates and times when they were said. I don't even know what month they were said. You know, all I know, they were said in the past. And I don't know why the union didn't really hash on that as far as a ground of defense for me, because it seemed like the union should have stood up and said, hey, did you say something to him when it was said?
I mean, that's what I'm thinking also. And first of all, for them to be doing or conducting an investigation about you kind of means they have to talk to you. I mean, you can't investigate me and never talk to me. After you get your facts together, somebody's going to come around and ask me questions. Did you say this? Did you say that? How could it be misunderstood that everybody thinks you said this or that? So for them to have, so when the post office did their investigation, they never spoke to you and questioned you and interviewed you?
They gave me a PDI, but it was not 15 questions or 15 statements that I had to ask against. Just like when Consuela said when she conducted her interviews with these employees that I don't know who they are, but she said even some of them were in other crafts, clerks and maintenance. You know, I don't even know when these statements were made or supposedly made up by me as
now,
I speak now.
Now let me say this because all this sounds very to the left to me, and not in the middle. So what I'm going to say is this right here. Based on the amount of money the local 304 spends on the Dayton office, their branch manager in particular, the amount of money that's spent on that office, I got to believe that maybe she has some advanced training that the rest of us are not aware of. Because I look at the money the local 304 spends on that Dayton branch president, and there is a lot of training, I would assume, going on. So maybe she got some training that didn't trickle down to the rest of the branch presidents yet, because right now I'm really not understanding the union's position as far as protecting you as a member. So I have to just lean that to she's got some advanced training that we don't have yet. And maybe when I get there I can question it then. But nonetheless, so you're out of the building, removed from the building, you're out of work for a couple of months. So when you did they allow you to come to your step one or your step two grievance meeting?
No. I didn't even get no feedback except it was denied. Then step three was supposed to have been sent up to Washington, D.C., and it was denied. I don't even know what management position on was denied. I never seen the paperwork as to what and how the strategy was developed from the union standpoint. I don't even know what they were saying on my behalf.
I would think now, again, they like to tell me I'm new to this situation, but I would think that if I have a mail handler who's out of work, who's put out of work, EP, I'm going to stay in contact with him, and I'm going to continually reassure him that it's a bad thing that happened, but worry you not, because we're going to get this fixed. I mean, at the very least, I'm going to stay in contact with him so that person knows that I'm fighting for you. So with no contact from the union, no contact from management, you just get told we're having a step one, a step two. Nobody's questioning you. And I'm sure that Consuela and Bip are going to hear this podcast, even though they like to tell me they don't listen. But they're going to hear this, and I hope they have questions or answers back that we can all have dialogue to find out what went wrong and how can we fix it. So you're out of work, and now you do the step one and step two. So then you have an arbitration?
Hold on. After step one and step two, they told me that the case was sent out for step three in Washington, D.C. And then it was denied in Washington, D.C., and it was sent back. Or I don't know what happened. I really don't know what happened, three, where it was set for arbitration. It was set for arbitration. The arbitration was set for this past Monday, October 15th. Now, that arbitration, I'm thinking, you know, I'm going into a hearing, but let me just tell you this, too. I asked Bip, I said, I want to know what's going on before I go into arbitration. What is the union arguing about on my behalf, or what have y'all been saying in these previous steps? All he told me was, we're citing just cause, just cause. And then he referred to the article in the contract referring to just cause. That's all the information I got from Bip going into arbitration. But I don't know, you know, if it was arbitration or whatever, because normally when you go into arbitration, you get sworn in. All parties get sworn in on union, the individual, the grievant, and management. When I went into this meeting, this is what I call it, a meeting, because this is what happened. I went in there. Everybody introduced themselves. After everybody introduced themselves, it was a little conversation among a couple people. Then the arbitrator asked me, do you mind leaving the room? I said, no, I don't mind leaving. I left the room for about 20 minutes. And Bip was in the room. Bip comes out and says the arbitrator made a decision. Okay, he went on to tell me the decision was that I was supposed to be off my job for a year. He's going to bring me back with back pay. He wanted me to start today. That's what the decision was. And also he said the arbitrator made the decision to reduce the letter of removal to a 7-day no time served suspension. And so I questioned him about that, because I said, why am I getting disciplined for something I didn't do? I said, can we talk to him about that or whatever? William McLemore's response to me was, no, that was the arbitrator's final decision. The union can't negotiate against the union's final decision. Now,
you mean against the arbitrator's final decision?
Yeah. Now, that to me seemed like it was an agreement that was made up or drawn up instead of a process of arbitration. And also, while I was sitting there, you know, Consuelo said a text came across her phone saying that they told the 15 people that they didn't have to come in. Now, normally, when you have an arbitration hearing, those people should have been there right then and there when I was there going into the arbitration meeting.
So true.
You know, but that's my perception of arbitration. I went into arbitration once when I was a steward, and I look at the arbitration as just like a court hearing. You know, you get sworn in, both parties testify, arbitrator makes his decision like a judge. He'll say, no, he gathers all his information, and then he'll say he'll get back and make a decision. Or he does have the option of making a decision just like a judge right then and there. That's my understanding of a normal arbitration process. But that didn't take place. That's why I referred to that arbitration hearing supposedly was a meeting to me. It seemed like it was some kind of agreement already drafted up, and they just presented it to the arbitrator, and I didn't have no say-so in it or anything.
Now, you know, let me say it, when a grievance.
And let,
oh, go ahead, brother.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You got the mic.
I was just going to say, you know, the communication within this union is just real poor. It's just real poor. You know, because it's just like I'm a dues-paying member, and no one even ever told me about our picnic this year. I don't even know when it took place or whatever, but I bet it was one that took place. I mean, it's just little trivial things, you know. And now now I got communication problems with something as serious as my career and my job on the line. You know, that really doesn't sit well with me, you know. It just really doesn't. When I
Nor
made numerous
it.
Inquiries.
Mm-hmm.
I made numerous inquiries about what's going on with my case. I even wanted to see documents, you know. And you know, I just really can't understand why every time I asked in the past about these 15 statements, why the same two or three things keep coming up from Consuela. You said that you would do anything to get this person off their job. You said that you hoped this person would stroke out. Oh, you know, the same answers come up. But I never gotten 10 or 15 or 12. All I know is as many as 15 statements made against me. But I don't know what context.
See, I just have a hard time digesting this story, because how could a mail handler, a dues paying or a mail handler, period, get allegations brought upon him in March, walked out on emergency placement in April, given a letter of what's happening in May, and at no point does the management interview or investigate him. And it doesn't appear to be a whole lot of interpersonal contact between you and your union. But I was speaking this afternoon to part of the 180 degree new direction team, Brother William Kirkland, who will be helping me try to reorganize headquarters. One of the questions he asked me to ask you was, when you were informed by Consuela that management told the witnesses not to show up, did your union put up any objection to that?
No, they did not. And let me just say this too, because you mentioned something that you probably left out. Management did contact me in May with a PDI.
Okay.
They did contact me with a PDI, so I want to put that on record.
How did you know you were up for removal?
Because after the PDI in May, they sent me a removal letter.
Okay, all right. That's how
they
I know.
They sent me a removal letter after the May PDI.
Okay, so allegations made in March, emergency placement in April, PDI in May, and later in May, as a result of that PDI, you were notified that you're being removed from the Postal Service because of improper conduct.
Right. They said during the investigation, I guess I was part of the PDI also, that as of June, I don't have the paperwork right in front of me, as of June, you will be removed from the U.S. Postal Service for improper conduct.
Well, again, for the post office to even levy a penalty of attempted removal, and what you have in your hand is improper verbiage, because there was no threat. There was some nasty things said, but there was no threat. And for the post office to be emboldened in such a manner to think that they're going to take somebody's job based on that, shame on our union for not doing a better job, I think, at representing that. I would have fought that charge to the point where, first of all, no, we're not going to settle for bring him back and he still has to have discipline. You never even did your investigation properly. That is full of procedural defects that we could have got. I mean, we should have got this whole thing thrown out. And let me say this to you. Hindsight is 20/20. Everybody can look at any case and say what they would or would not have done. But the outcome I just see it being better with better representation. But the fact of the matter is, through all of this, no communication between your union and you, I think that's just unacceptable. And one of the things when I started out was we talked about a process. Branch presidents, and again, I am nobody that you need to follow my instructions. I'm suspended myself, you know, but don't allow people to just have issues that you can't talk to them about or you don't talk to them about. So,
let me be specific.
Go ahead, my
brother. It wasn't like it was no communication, it was minimum communication.
Okay.
It was very little communication. I had some communication, but very minimal. And I want to say this for the record, too. Like I say, everybody, I work for 305, Washington, D.C., Atlanta 310, and Dallas Local 311. I never throughout my whole career had a piece of discipline in those locals. My discipline that I'm generating in my career is sitting right here in Dayton. It's generating on the local 304.
Well, again, we have to get more tenacious as we represent our members. You know, again, talking to Brother Kirkland, and he was like, you know, one of the initial concepts, the base for unions is to represent and protect the craft. If you're not going to represent and protect the craft, then what do we need you for?
Let me expound on what you're saying. What you're saying is correct, but you need to be a little more specific. What you need to say to the fullest extent in good faith. There's such thing as representation and full representation. You know, like I got represented, still suffer. Basically, what happened to me, they did what was in the law. But they could have done a lot better job than what they did as far as going up for a defense for me.
Okay. All right, and I respect that. So, you know, we have to get more in tune with our members, so to speak. And anytime somebody's put out of work, branch presidents, stewards, we should be going out of our way to stay in contact with them because think about the psychological dump on that person. You just got your main source of income severed. Let me talk to you, at least let you know we're working for you. So like the brother was saying, he had representation, but it was minimal. So let's just try to increase that. That's how we become a stronger union. So after the arbitration went on, and another thing I'd like to say about the arbitration is I've been on the other side of the table in these situations far more than I care to remember. You are not going to arrive at an arbitration resolve that includes bring you back to work, full back pay. We have to keep you out of your job for a year. You're not going to arrive at a resolve in 20 minutes of that nature. I don't care who you are. So if that was the final outcome, that mean, and the people who were supposed to testify were told not to come, as a union, why would we not discuss that with the union member, as a representation? I'm sorry, as a representative, because that deal was worked out before that day started. Why would we not discuss that with the mail handler? And maybe the mail handler will say, "That's wonderful, I'll take it." Or in this case, he may say, "Wait a minute, can we renegotiate something?" So you were never made aware of this agreement until it was put to you that you have to accept it, correct?
Well, Bibb told me, William McLemore told me that the union cannot do anything about this non-negotiable because it's a final decision by the arbitrator. Now, my thing is this. How can the arbitrator make a decision and he haven't heard nothing from my side, from me personally? I was never sworn in. I was never sworn in when I went and supposedly attend arbitration meeting. before I was able to be sworn in or whatever, I was asked to leave the room. And then, like I said, 20 minutes later, that was presented to me as a final decision by the arbitrator. And what made it so bad, too, this took place, too. When he first came to me with that decision by the arbitrator, he said the arbitrator wanted me to start right then and there that particular day, later on in the day. And I said, what? So when I said that, I said, hey, can we talk to him about it? All of a sudden, William McElmore says, oh, well, I'll go back and talk to him because that is kind of unreasonable. He went back in and negotiated that. Something just don't really sit well with me, because if he went back and negotiated my start time, how come he couldn't negotiate the piece of discipline I got and the other condition that I got under the decision? It's like I didn't have no say-so whatsoever on my own behalf, and I don't know what he negotiated in there for the arbitrator to come to that conclusion. I never seen any documents that he presented before the arbitrator and management.
Well, in this local, and I'm going to try to say this, they like to pre-arbitrate everything. I don't know. I'm trying to put this in a way that I'm not sounding sarcastic. We've got over $500,000 in a bank account, and I think that having money in the bank is way more important to the union right now than representing members in a good manner. So if it costs money to arbitrate, we'll pre-arb, take the lesser of the right thing for you, but we still keep to have money. We still get to have money in the union overall bank account, and I gotta say.
Right.
Not the purpose of the bank account. What good is it for us as a union to have $10 trillion in there if we're losing cases because we won't spend money for better representation? And I think that's what, and again, I use that key word, I think that's what happened in this case. Rather than spend money to arbitrate and get you your back pay, probably plus some interest because they had no reason for putting you out of work and not have you move from your job, that would have cost the union an arbitrator's fee. So they said, we'll just keep our money in the bank, and this is good enough. Heck, we got them back to work.
I think in my situation, my case shouldn't even went out the building under the circumstances. It shouldn't have been sent out to Washington, D.C. as far as, you know, being tried on step three level. You know, I don't know. That's just my personal opinion on the circumstances, because that's not showing me strength within the union. If, you know, a 32-year veteran could get walked out like that, what's to happen, you know, of a 2-year veteran, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't protect a career-minded veteran employee over 30 years experience, that's not saying, hey, we're strong, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely not what it's saying. So let me ask you a question,
you know,
brother.
Go ahead.
Based on what you did, have to agree to or not agree, settle for, what would you have done different if you could have communicated, if BIT would have listened or you could have communicated with anybody on that arbitration team for you? What would you have asked to be done differently?
As far as negotiations or?
Yes, as far as the end result. As far as the end result. What did you get?
As far as the end result, as far as for what should have been offered to me?
Yes.
Well, for one, I don't feel as though I did anything wrong and I was guilty of anything. And right now, as I speak, you know, they haven't proven to me, and the union haven't showed me that they prove that I did anything for guilt. But I don't think, you know, I should get my job back conditioning with a piece of discipline in it. That's for one. And I think, you know, my rights for due process were severed somewhat, you know, because it's even just like Kavanaugh in the Supreme Court hearing. He had a right to face his accuser. She was going to try to stay anonymous at first. You know, I didn't even get the opportunity to face my accusers. All I know is 15 of them, 15 different people gave statements. I would try to inform the union, try to make them stronger in the negotiation. Hey, stand up for my constitutional right of due process. You know, that's...
Wow. I hear you, brother. So, I just said, wow.
I mean, if
I
my constitutional right get violated and the union let them step on it, I got rights outside of contractual rights on the job. You know, everybody.
That's correct.
Do.
That's right.
So I feel as though, you know, my constitutional rights should have been upheld a little more than what they were. So I don't even know if that was brought up in my defense or whatever. Like I said, I haven't seen no paperwork, none.
Wow.
So
you know, that's a sad story. It is. When we got a mail handler out of work because of an allegation that was never founded or unfounded, all we know is we went and made a deal, and the grievant, the person accused, never got his day in court, never got to provide any information. And again, I just don't see how we could sit down and arrive at a resolve or a settlement if I'm not even asking you, did you do it? Did you not do it? Well, what was the events around why they think you did it? In other words, I'm not doing an investigation with you. So how can I possibly arrive at a resolve for you?
And I just want to say this to the audience, that, you know, by law, from the National Labor Board, the union is bound by law to bargain in good faith. Not just bargain. There's a difference between just bargain. Mm-hmm.
Talk to
bargain
him.
And good faith. And
this
in
is
my
labor
situation,
law.
Yes, yeah,
sir.
Yeah, National Labor Board requires unions, not just postal unions, unions across the board in different industries, communication workers, food workers, pipe fitters, they're bound by laws to bargain in good faith. And I don't feel I had bargaining on my behalf in good faith. I feel as though I had bargained, like I said, representation. There's a difference between representation and representation, full representation. And, you know, just to piggyback on what I'm saying, you could probably Google National Labor Board and see what the unions are required by law. I remember that from my time from being a steward. That's how I represented people. I try to represent them like a lawyer-client relationship. But I didn't have a lawyer-client relationship, you know, in my defense going through the grievance process. That's what's bad. That's what was bad. That's what I was talking about. I had communication, but it was minimal communication. I had communication, yeah, we filed a grievance, step one, step two, step three. But on what behalf? I was kept in the dark. You know, you go and pay a lawyer for representation. You want to know what's happening down the pipe from A to Z. And in this case, I'm a dues paying member, so I'm entitled to that information pertaining to me during my representation, but it wasn't afforded to me.
Well, and you know, brother, if anybody is representing anybody, I won't even make this personal. It only makes good business sense to keep them in the loop. Because let me tell you, at some point, I may say to you, hey, listen, this is the offer they have on the table. You might come back to me and say, hey, listen, tell them to keep it all. I just hit the lottery yesterday. I don't even want the job anymore. And I'm going, you know, to the far end. You just communicated to me that there's no need to fight that fight anymore. So I'm just
Ken,
simply saying.
Let me just. Oh.
Go ahead, brother.
No, I just wanted to say this. They did make me an offer. Consuela came to me. As a matter of fact, as we speak today, October 22nd is today. Today's October 21st. But anyway, about a month ago, Consuela came to me with an offer that management said she was in a meeting with management. She said management said they'll bring you back with no back pay and you are to work on the first floor. I work on the second floor on the flat sorter. That I was supposed to work on the first floor and she'll bring me back with no pay. Now, granted, I turned that down immediately because, like I said, as I speak now, I don't feel that I did anything wrong to merit threaten nobody or create no physical harm to be put out on emergency placement and then it led up to a removal. That didn't even transpire, you know.
Yeah. So the management made you an offer. And again, the union got you a better offer than what management made, but you feel that your representation wasn't even close to being what it should have been because you should have gotten everything, not conditionals.
I'll put it like this. I should have been made 100% whole. I should be going back the way I left out without no conditions. That's what I feel that should transpire. Really, this situation shouldn't even came up to arbitration. Because, like you said, the cost to the union for arbitration, I don't know why they're not trying to budget their costs and stuff. Because evidently, you know, I don't know what the finances are in the union or whatever, but that's something that members need to, you know, strive for to say, hey, we need a quarterly statement put on the website to see what we got, what's coming and going, you know. It's just like we haven't even got no aprons since when, you know. And reason why I heard 2 years ago the union don't have no money. But yet and still you got dudes paying members. So, you know, I'm like, and ain't a lot of members dropping off by membership, so it seems like the fund should be holding steady.
Well, you know, again, at our executive board meetings, you know, he's very proud of the fact that we've got over $500,000. In fact, he constantly lets us know that his predecessor, Bell, I guess Bell must have spent all the money because he constantly lets us know that when he came in, there was only $12,000 or some small amount. But, you know, him and his creative accounting, we've now got over $500,000, but nothing's being spent on arbitration. So, again, I don't know what the big kick is with having a treasure chest full of funds that you're not spending on the members. But, you know, once I get into the office, maybe that'll become clearer to me. Hey, listen, we got 90 seconds before we close this podcast out. So, Brother Brooks, I want to say to you before I give you closing words, I want to say I thank you for coming on this show tonight. In fact, you give us our closing words and then I'll close the show.
I just want to say to everybody, you know, just don't take your contract for granted. And also, research what's in the AM. There's a wealth of information from management side in the AM that you will be a part and that, hey, nobody's never told you. At least in the Dayton office. But there's a wealth of information in the AM. And also, I want to stress to all veterans, you have protection on the Merit Protection System
MSPB.
Board. The Merit Protection System Board. Right, it's called MPSB. And you should also look and see what guidelines you fall under there and use your rights under there. That is a means and avenue that all veterans have. So I don't have no further ado, and I'll just leave it at that. But like I said, just do research outside of the contract. There's a lot of information out there.
Okay. And again, this is Ken Hodge, Branch President, Columbus, Ohio.
Make it right.
President, I'm going to add.
As I turned up the collar.
I might add, I'm sorry for the loud music there, but I'm bringing you a series of podcasts because, listen, folks, You can look at this podcast and the series that's coming up behind it any way you want to. But the goal here is to put information out to the members that they are just not aware of. I don't want you to look at it as throwing dirt because it's not throwing dirt. Again, I make no bones or no secrets about me wanting to be your local president because I'm going to bring change to the union. But in the process, let's talk about these things. Let's look at what happened and how can we make it better. Now, those who don't want to make it better will just put up arguments or points trying to deface what we just said tonight. But let me tell you something. This is a male hand talking to you about what happened to him. Not SOPs, not policy. This is what happened to him. And I'm going to go on a limb and say, if you hear this podcast, I'm pretty sure there's a bunch of people in 304 that can say, I hear you, brother, because it happened to me also. And if that is the case, then we have to get together and stop that from happening to all of our members. Hey, this is Kenny Hodge, and I do thank you for listening to the podcast. Again, I'm being contacted by other members that want to tell their story. And again, I've got a podcast which gives me a platform, and I'm going to use my platform to allow my voice and the leadership style of 304 to be brought to the members' ear every day, every other day, because I want members to make an informed decision when it's time to vote next year. And that informed decision, I hope it ends right here with Kenny Hodge. Hey, Brother Brooks, everybody have a nice evening, and you and I will be talking, sir. Have a good one.
Oh, okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.